consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Well, hello there, I'm Adrian Eames. This is the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Coming up, Waterford striker Graham Cummins and Cabin Teely's director of football, Pat Devlin, on the current state of the game in this country. And we'll also be hearing about the ties that bind Drogheda United and Turkish outfit Trabzonspor. And by the magic of technology, James O'Toole is on the line. How are you, James?
Hello, Adrian. How are you doing on this wonderful sunny Monday?
Not too bad at all. A sunny Monday, as you say. And the top four teams from last season back training. No positive coronavirus tests to date. Pretty terrific. We seem to be heading in a certain direction, but key this week, James, Thursday, because that's when most of the clubs, we think, will get the financial plan rolled out by the FAI, by Niall Quinn and co. And that's going to be pivotal, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be the meeting that basically makes or breaks this season as far as the League of Ireland is concerned. Financial packages are going to have to be in place because clubs can't afford to lose money. And already we've seen some accounts showing that clubs are losing money in the last season anyway. So they can't afford to lose any more. But I'd say, as you're talking about those four clubs, I'd say every one of those players, you always see it every year, the cows coming out of the shed. I'd say they're all like that coming out of the shed to get out onto the pitch this morning.
Buck leapin' out the gate. Absolutely. Well, also on the line is Graham Cummins of Waterford. Graham, of course, a very notable striker in the league and, of course, in England over the last few years. How are you doing? How have you managed to cope with the last couple of months, Graham? Has it been difficult for you or have you taken it in your stride?
Well, most correct, you know, I'm a defender now to start with. I changed, that's what I say, for Waterford, my last game. No, I played as a centre-half, so you need to do your research a bit there, no, Adrian.
We made reference to that a few months ago, back in the days when football was in play, that you were now playing as a centre-back. How did that come about? I mean, presumably, you never played as a centre-back for Cork in the day, did you?
No, I played there for Waterford when I first played for him, and it was always a position I really liked, and then I had to play a few games up front, and of course the rest is history. But I've always considered myself a defender, probably why I miss a lot of opportunities when I'm in front of goals. So it was something at the start of this year that I either said I'm going to finish up playing football or I'll go back to play centre half. And in fairness, when I text Rennie and stuff like that, he was probably the only manager that mightn't have laughed me out of the place. And it was going well anyway till the break. But getting back to your question, how I've kept busy. It obviously was tough. I didn't expect it to go on this long. I don't think anyone did. I thought when we left the training ground the last day, whenever we had a schedule to be back in 10 days. And it's been a long time since then. I actually haven't kicked the football since then. But I just had a daughter the week before the shutdown of the league, so she's kept me very entertained and everything like that. So it's been really good in that kind of sense, because I wouldn't have got that opportunity to spend as much time with her. But like I said, I've definitely missed it a bit, but you do get used to it as well. You're just staying at home and getting into a routine was just the main thing for me. Like, I get up and train every day, like, and that's important for me. It just keeps you mentally focused and kind of in the back of your head saying that there might be something to go back to, because I think if you just stop training, you're just giving up, really.
And what's your baby daughter's name?
It's Clodagh. So she's 14 weeks now today. So it worked out well that kind of way. I got the one game I played when she was born, and that was it, because my plan was to hopefully she'd get to see me play, but that looks very unlikely, I think, at the moment, the way things are going. I think, like you said, Thursday's a big day, but again, I'm reading reports that there mightn't be repercussions in clubs. It could be a case of 6-7 clubs wanting to go back and the rest of them not really willing to go back, and then it starts all over again, doesn't it? The next new plan and the next phase and everything just gets delayed longer and longer. Like I said, I know the FAI have been coming up with plans and this and that, but sure, like, I could come up with a plan, it's implementing it, you know what I mean? I could say, oh, this is the way the league's going to go, we'll do this, we'll try and get these figures for you, but until clubs are going to be guaranteed that money and say this will be in your bank account, don't worry about that. If you play behind closed doors, we have that paid for you. It's not going to cost you a penny. I can't see a lot of clubs agreeing to it going back because it doesn't make sense for them.
You're talking about the clubs not wanting to go back or any of that, but I'm taking the still, as you guys still have plans in place anyway, just to keep your fitness up across the entire squad, yeah?
We've been training away, like I said, I think responsibility goes on players at some stage. At the beginning, we monitored ourselves and we had all our GPS and things like that and training schedules. But I think after a while, it was just a case of like, go away and just train yourselves because you don't know how to go back. It's difficult for a manager to tell lads they need to train week in, week out. He's told us keep fit and that they go off some sort of program. But it's difficult for anyone to tell someone what to do when they're not paying them or anything like that. It's very hard. I think players themselves nowadays, it's not like years ago where they go out and just drink and do what they want and see it as a free time, because we've been in the kind of situation where we didn't know when exactly we'd be going back, and you keep preparing for certain days. I think as well, the modern football is probably, there's more vanity inside in players as well. They don't want to be overweight or anything like that because that's just the way the world is at the moment. But yeah, you keep ticking away. I think just as anyone, like, it's, you've interest in exercise. If you're a footballer, you'll always keep training away anyway till you probably hit a certain age where your bones are, and muscles are hurting every morning waking up after training. But that Waterford squad is very young. Like, I was the oldest outfielder, so I presume most of the lads are still ticking away. But I said a lot of responsibility and trust has been placed on ourselves.
And thinking about if there is a prospect to go back, it looks like it may be behind closed doors. Have you been watching any of the Bundesliga to see what it's like, and what do you think? It'd be a bit strange to play that way.
I've seen some of the games. If I'm being honest, it's a hard watch, I think. Not having the atmosphere and things, you can kind of drift out of games and spend more attention on your phone, looking up social media than watching like basically what looks like a training ground game. In terms of players playing, I would just want to go back playing any sort of way, like, but then it's, does anyone really like playing friendlies at the start of the year? And we won't even have that kind of a crowd. It is tough. It will feel like friendlies, or like when I was in England, a reserve game where you're just going out onto a pitch and you're just kind of just doing it for the sake of doing it. I know there will be some sort of element of competition in it if the league returns. But it will, certainly it'll take a couple of games to get used to. It won't be just something that'll go in and you'll have the same intensity. For me anyway, I really do like playing in front of a crowd. Whether, like, I've read reports in England that they're thinking of pumping crowd noises into the ground, whether that's something that would happen here in League of Ireland, I don't know. Just some grounds you can go to in League of Ireland can be very quiet anyway, so there mightn't be any difference for some people, like, so you never know.
And Graham, have you had much communication, or have the players in general have had much communication over the last couple of weeks from Waterford, the club? Because, of course, it was noted that Waterford informed players that they were being temporarily laid off by email. In fact, is that how you found out about the situation at Waterford? Were you notified by email that you were being laid off?
I found out, I got the email, but I hadn't read it because we got the email very late at night, and it was only because the way we've kind of contacted, like, I think everyone, we have a players group app, and someone just said it, saying, looks like we've all been laid off. No, I didn't know at the time. I checked my email, and then, of course, I read it, and I realised what had just happened. But I think, from my point of view, I don't think it's hard on an owner of a club or a club secretary, of course. They're not going to ring every player individually and say to them, oh, look, this is the way it is, it's got to be layoff. I think what kind of annoyed me a bit more is that they didn't contact the manager, and you would think that would be the least they can do. You get one person to do it, and then the manager can decide how he tells the squad. Because a manager knows us a lot better than an owner would know us. He knows what's the best way to approach it. He knows lads' family situations. I mean, before that, he rang me before other things changed with our wages or anything like that, or before we had to be furlonged, all that kind of way. And he knows that certain lads have families to cope with, and he knew that certain lads were living at home with their mother and father, and it mightn't have affected them that much. Just with the players and things, we've been just communicating through the groups app. It's not been going as much as it was at the start. I think it's just kind of leveled off. But Brian Murphy, goalkeeper or captain, has kind of like passed on any information he hears from the PFAI. But nothing's really changed for me. Like, you know, it's the same boat we were 10 weeks ago. Like I said, he might text in saying, oh, we had this meeting today, this is the plan. 4 weeks later, there's a different plan. And like I said, anyone can come up with a plan. Like, it's implementing it and carrying it out is the big thing. And there's been nothing like that. As they say, talk is cheap. Like,
and what's your sense, Graham? Lee Power obviously is the club's owner. He's based across the water. He's got so many other interests, including Swindon, and there are issues there. What's your sense of if there is a potential return for clubs and the financial plan? There's, you know, much speculation about what might be in it, of course, and we'll know more about that later in the week. But what's your sense of Watford's position in all of this? Because presumably at this stage, you'd be expecting communication from Watford, from Alan Reynolds, if you're likely to be going back training, which is, you know, that could be on the cards next week, going by the way that the roadmap has been laid out, potentially. But do you get a sense that that's in the offing, that you could be returning to training next week with Watford?
Absolutely no chance I'll be back training next Monday with Waterford. I've seen the roadmap, but unless Thursday is the big day, and I think it's a get-out-of-jail-free card for a lot of clubs, because they mightn't have financially, they're saying to themselves, if we lose out on anything or have been losing money and there's no repercussions, this is their way of just pulling out, and they've got their excuse of pulling out halfway through a season if they didn't want to be involved in the club. I don't think Waterford, like I said, does, like, Lee is probably, he's obviously a businessman, and will he want to go back if the club are going to be losing money and the FAI don't promise the funds that will actually make sure the club are balancing their books? I don't think so. I really don't. From what the lads in the groups app have been saying, things like that, I don't think so, because I think it's different. Like I said, he's been very good. I don't know him personally or anything, but he's been very good at the start of the year to say he was staying on one more year. And probably even by that statement, you got the sense of he needed the community to pull together, the fans to pull together, everyone to be in and get the attendances up. And of course, like, if the league is to resume, there isn't going to be attendances. He's not going to get that community together. I think, like, for, like, with Cork and stuff, a fan-owned club, they'd be willing to help. You know, like, and they own the club, so they'd be willing to just maybe get the club through and put their hands in their pockets, and they might lose a bit of money here or there. But I think if you're from a business perspective, like I said, again, I don't know Lee personally, but he's obviously a businessman. He's obviously a clever businessman. And if someone comes up to me, if I'm in a business, and it's probably not, I haven't grown up following the club, anything like that, and someone says to me, look, do you want to go back, but you're going to lose money, you would say no. Do you know, if someone says to you, well, you don't have to go back. So I really see it as a case of, I'm very doubtful at this time that they will go back into the league again, unless, like they said, clubs have been forced, like, not, well, are going to get pushed into it. But again, like, if there's two sides, they're saying clubs are going to get pushed into it, but then they're saying there's no repercussions. So again, I don't think they will go back.
James, in your view, and when you look at the Premier Division, we'll be chatting to Pat Devlin shortly about the First Division, but it seems to be split. Obviously, you've got the four teams from last year, they're back training, but a lot of the other clubs in the Premier Division seem to be very, very dubious about a return, based obviously on the way they look at it in terms of the finances, whether it's going to be financially viable playing matches behind closed doors. Is there a danger that clubs and the football public will be expecting way too much from whatever is in this financial plan that will be laid out by the FAI later this week?
Yeah, there might be a danger, all right, because it's not going to be a saviour. There's not going to be a profit made out of this. As Graham said, if you've got a businessman who's used to making money in his business, why would he put money into something that is from the outset is going to be a loss maker anyway? Like we've seen accounts over the last couple of days, for instance, the Dundalk accounts from last year, where the loss is phenomenal. And they're our most successful club. Like, and then you look at Finn Harp's books where they made a profit from 18 and 19. Now, it's only a minimal profit, but it's a profit. So, but if you're losing out, as Graham says, the gates of Waterford, I was at their last game, which was their home game against Derry, where Graham slotted in as centre-half, and I thought I was actually losing my marbles when I saw him go in there. But there was a good crowd at that game. A really, really good crowd. It wasn't the best of nights. It was a rainy night. A couple of absolute smashing goals. But the crowds were decent enough. But probably not enough to make a profit out of even still. So yeah, you can't expect the likes of Lee Power or anything like that to go back unless the financial package is big enough to make sure there is no loss. And I can't see that with the way the FEI are at the moment, with the way UEFA are saying that they already received the payment 4 years ago. Yeah. I can't see the finances being there for it unless there's once again another government bailout, which it's very unlikely, especially in the times we're now living in.
It's a difficult situation, no doubt about that. And added to that as well, Graham, there's been a lot of talk, and you'll have heard it, I'm sure, about Alan Reynolds, the Waterford manager, linking him with a move to Dundalk. Have you heard much about that rumour?
Just before you get into that, could I ask a question? I've been wondering this, with the FAI package and the attendances of crowds, how are, like, obviously at the start with your licensing, you put in, say, your average crowd, but what if clubs come back to the FAI and say, oh, well, we were going to get, maybe if we're doing well, we would get 3,000 at the end of games and we're losing out. And do you know what I kind of mean? Yeah. If Waterford done well and Waterford were predicted to be one of the bottom teams in the league, but all of a sudden we're up challenging for Europe and they go back to the FAI and say, oh, well, had we been doing this well, we've predicted less, we would have got another 3,000, you owe us more money. Like, is that going to be involved in this financial package and all that kind of way? Like, if, or are they just going to say, well, Dundalk and Rovers are the top two teams, they're going to get their crowd, you're not going to be challenging. So
It's a difficult one, James. Have you got a read on it? I presume
it'd be a difficult one. I think the only way they could even look at it probably would be based on figures from last season, a full season of last season. That's the only way they could legitimately, if they're going to look at this is how many people are going to miss out on, would be that. As far as a boost in this year's attendances, maybe they could factor in, like, for instance, Bohemians sold out all their season tickets this year. So they could factor that in, if you know what I mean, towards whatever kind of package goes in. And if season tickets boost was up as a percentage of that, with percentage of gates up by that much. I don't think they're going to go into that much detail, to tell you the truth. I think they're going to put a figure on the table and go take it or leave it.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, they've enough to be going on with at the moment. It could well be that each club is given an offer of X amount and maybe some further incentives. But like you say, there could be a plan based on attendance figures last year and income and based on the club's accounts, which, of course, they would have access to. So I guess we'll have to wait and see, Graham. It's not ideal.
Yeah.
But hey, on the Alan Reynolds one, what about that?
I've read about it. Like, I mean, you can't blame him at the moment. Like, we have a group chat and he messaged us telling us about the meeting that's going to take place this week. And of course, lads slagged him about it. But at the moment, if it is true, I can't blame him for wanting to take it. I mean, Dundalk look like they could come back in some sort of form and play football again this year. Whether that's just a mini tournament and then in Europe, where Waterford is uncertain. I mean, he has to look after himself. Like, he's done tremendous for Waterford, and he would be a massive loss to Waterford because of the job he's done. And I think he's actually, this year again, his budget was reduced and he's got a squad again together with a lot of players no one's heard of. But the way he works with lads, he makes lads want to play for the club. And I could see him, like, if he did go to Dundalk, he'd be a massive boost to them. He's brilliant to have around the place, but he'd be a big loss to Waterford. But like I said, I couldn't blame him because he's got to look after himself. Like, everyone has to look after themselves in this climate. You can't wait around and go, what if, what might happen? And we've seen a few weeks, I mean, maybe Thursday, if he'll know more the way the club is going to go, if they might turn around Waterford and say that's it, and maybe he's waiting on that. I don't know, you'd have to ask him the question. But either way, if he wants to go, I think everyone would understand, because financially and the fact that he might actually be able to coaching football again this year, where if he stays at Waterford, he mightn't be, and it mightn't be, he doesn't know his future, and you can't gamble on your future.
You've played under lots of managers. It sounds like you've been very impressed by Alan Reynolds playing under him.
No, I have. Like I said, he's probably one of the only characters in football that, like I said, when I mentioned I want to play centre-half, didn't just dismiss it straight away, even though I played forward for my whole career. And he listens to lads. He goes down, he sits, he talks to the older players, he asks for advice. He always makes the dressing room good. I listened to him on a show the other day, and he was brilliant the way he actually said about winning and losing, that if you lose, you have to come into the dressing room even happier the next week, because the lads will get a drive off what kind of mood he's in, which is true. I've worked under so much managers. You lose a game and you come in on a Monday and the place is like a morgue, and the manager doesn't even say hi to you, and you literally are like, oh, it's like you have to be a gracious loser as well. You know, you got to take the good with the bad. And I think, like, I hope that the season can go again, because, and I hope he does stay at Waterford, because I want to continue to work with him. Like I said, the few months I've had at Waterford have been so enjoyable, and he's very understanding. Like I said, there's some managers aren't. I mean, with me as an older player, he would ask my opinions on a lot of things and talk to me a lot, and even like just with your body and stuff like that, he'd know. It was probably the first year this year, pre-season runs, that I got me run shortened because my legs were gone a bit for sprints. So, like I said, things like that just make a lot of a difference. And it would be, like I said, he'd be a massive asset to Dundalk and a huge loss to Waterford.
Okay, well, listen, keep her going, Graham. Thanks for joining us on the RTE podcast, and keep up the training. And I'm sure, like a lot of players, you're obviously in limbo at the moment, waiting to see what happens. And it must be so difficult, all this uncertainty, because back in January, you made the move to Waterford and you were looking forward to the new season. And then, bang, coronavirus. And as we've said several times on the podcast over the last couple of weeks and the last 6 or 8 weeks, you know, there is a bigger picture here, and we're conscious that people have lost their lives and families are suffering and they're grieving. But, you know, for footballers, that their livelihood is gone at the moment, and it is difficult for you.
Yeah, it is. But like you said, there's a bigger picture, and the way at the start, yeah, I missed it. But when I look back in it and years to come, I got to spend the time with my daughter, and that's something I could have never done again. So I played football throughout my career, and football will come back, but you just got to kind of stay on the positive side of things. There's no point dwelling on things and what ifs and stuff, and we'll just see what happens in the future in a few weeks.
Okay, well, listen, the best of luck. Many thanks for joining us on the RTE Soccer Podcast. Defender Graham Cummins. He's left his striking days behind. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
That's Graham Cummins, once of Cork City, and of course had a pretty fine career across the water as well. Were you impressed by him playing in defence the last time you saw him, James?
Do you know what? I was very, very impressed. Not one ball went past him. Like I don't know whether, because it was obviously against Derry City, it was in Waterford, and when he lined up, we're kind of going, hang a second, if I got the numbers wrong here, what's he doing back there? But for crosses coming across, himself and Brian Murphy had a really, really good understand with each other. And when balls come in, he come out and headed, and you could see himself and Brian directing the other guys around him, because, as you know, Alan has quite a young squad as well, and there's a couple of young kids playing in that squad that day. And he's lost a fair few players over the last couple of years, like Erie going up to Linfield and a couple of other players disappearing on him. And he really, really impressed me. And he's actually, his attacking came in again, because he set up one of the goals as well from a corner where he went at it, missed it, went at it again. He got two chances and laid it off, and they score a superb goal. But yeah, I was quite impressed with his positioning for someone, as he said, like, we mostly everybody knows him as a striker. But yeah, his positioning sense was actually really, really good, because that's the difficult part about playing centre-half. It's knowing when to run out, when not to run out, and when to hold your line, and running in straight lines, which some defenders don't do. Some defenders run kind of crab claw across the pitch, as it were, which basically puts your whole line, your defensive line, off. But no, I was quite impressed with him, I must say.
I've seen you playing five-a-side football in defence, and you're what's the expression there? Crab crawl?
Yeah, like I remember I was playing like that. Mick Cook gave me an awful, awful shouting that he did one day, and I didn't do it after it.
Well, another man who might give you a bit of a shout would be Pat Devon, Director of Football of Cavan Teely, who's on the line. We're talking there, Pat, about the Premier Division and the prospects for the season and it resuming. The picture in the First Division, whatever about the Premier Division, what's your take on where things are at with regards to the First Division?
Well, very difficult at the moment. I think everybody is, you know, a little bit all over the place. Obviously, health is the most important thing. We're all waiting until Thursday. We hold our breath. Some people are saying there'll be no promotion, no relegation. Really, I think clubs are struggling. I think we have to be honest. Financially, like the FAI certainly, you know, will have to find a huge amount of money. And where it's coming from, no one knows. But in all that, we don't want to be negative. The most important thing is we want to try and get back to as normal as we possibly can. From a First Division point of view, it's been a disaster because right from last November up to February, we didn't even know who we were playing, what league we'd have, who's going to be in the league. We had the under the Shamrock Rovers situation and so on. And then we get our fixtures the week before, and of course we kick off and we get a great start. We go unbeaten for three games. I think they should call it quits now and hand the league over to Cavan Teely and be promoted. But on a serious note, I just think it's an opportunity to make radical changes. And I do think that everything must be taken into consideration. And I do think there's an opportunity here for maybe one season or two seasons to have one league, just one league with both Premier and First Division, and give people the opportunity and clubs the opportunity to progress their own individual situations. And then after that period of 1 or 2 years, you say, OK, lads, this is what's going to happen. This is the new format. And if you make it, great. If you don't make it, well, these are where you can go and this is what you can do. But I think this situation of playing the league with no competition just doesn't make sense. Coming back and playing a two-round league, yeah, I'd have no problem. I'd have no problem playing a one-round league. But I don't have to find the money for it. It's the people in the clubs who have to find the money. The new regulations with the coronavirus and situations that are going to develop even further. So it's very, very difficult for everybody. But in all that, I think there has to be positivity. I think we have to get it back playing. I listened to the message from FIFA, and it's all about unity. And what a better time now to have unity than now. I mean, a lot of the clubs and the history of the clubs will tell you there's a huge amount of self-interest and has been for many, many years in League of Ireland, and in a sense has ruined it. And I can understand that because, as I said, you want to win, you want the best players, and you certainly want to qualify for Europe. But no league can be run with four clubs. No league can be run with six clubs. You need everybody to have a fighting chance, and you need, you know, have the romance back in it. If you go back to years ago when even Bray Wanderers came in first in 85, there was romance in it. You could go and get a game against Rovers or Dundalk, and you had a possibility of beating them. If you look back to the 1990 Cup final to Francis, who had an unbelievable opportunity to get into Europe, and unfortunately, you know, our fortune for us, we beat them. But the romance has gone out of it a little bit now, and I don't think the rich clubs can move on without the rest, and somewhere in that there's a message of unity. And if everybody can pull together, you look at the FAI, we're badly divided at the moment. We have obviously a new regime in. We've had terrible problems in the past, a lack of transparency. And now if you look forward, you have the Schoolboy League. And the Schoolboy League deserves massive, massive credit over the years for, you know, what they've produced. And yet, at the moment, we're all at loggerheads about the Schoolboy League and the Elite League and the League of Ireland. I think someone around it should get them all around the table and make sure that everybody gets, you know, what they want out of it and move the whole game forward. You have the ladies now coming on stream and they really need to be treated in a proper manner. You have the Leinster League, which was always a fantastic league, the Munster League, Ulster, Connacht and all the schools football. Everybody should now be pulling together, get the unity and get it going. But there has to be some type of pyramid system where everybody can try and, you know, get to where they want to go. And I just think starting off until this situation is sorted out, that one league might give everybody that opportunity.
Well, would you just elaborate on that radical plan which you're suggesting there, one league? What's your vision? Because obviously in the background as well, amidst all the coronavirus and, you know, football being put on hold, there was talk of the All-Ireland League, and that too is in the background. So we'll have to see how that plays out. So talk to me about what you would envisage.
Well, first I think if you look at every individual club, there's such gaps between them. I mean, lots of clubs are struggling financially. Okay, their facilities are not up to standard. You know, we're talking about academies, we're talking about, you know, we're a third world country, even worse at the moment with our facilities. So if clubs get a chance and an opportunity, we say, to develop the game within their own parish, within their own community, and given that opportunity, with all the promises that have been made, speak to government, speak to the FAI, and develop around that, and not have so much money going out the gate at the moment. Try and get it in and make it better for everybody, and make it, you know, try and turn it into a brand and a situation where it's full time football. If you look at all the fellas doing their coaching and all the young boys who are aspiring to coach, you can't make a living here in Ireland. It's just not on. And at the end of the day, if we have all these clubs and we're spending so much money, it has to be better. And here's a great opportunity for everybody to step back a little bit and to go forward. And if we have one league, it can be, you know, home and away. And at the end of the day, you know, clubs will still qualify for Europe. We'll still have the FAI Cup. And yes, of course we can talk to the North and see what we can do there and expand it. And then, and if after 2 years or year and a half of this trial that, you know, will help us get over the coronavirus and the pandemic, if it hasn't worked, well, we sit down and we say, now, lads, we're going back to a first division, and those teams who finish the last 10 teams or whatever it may be, you'll be relegated and you're going to be in that first division. Or if you don't have your house in order and all the different things in place, or if you haven't spent your money properly, you could end up in the first division with a chance of getting back up. But it needs to be done. We've talked about it since 1985. When originally the first division started, to be quite honest, Adrian, it was great. I mean, people went along. There was great crowds, great interest. But now the first division is nothing. It's horrible. And anyone that's involved in will tell you that. All it is a platform to get out of it. So why not try and put everybody in together for a period of time, keep the European spots obviously going, and those who win the league qualify for Europe, and those who qualify win the Cup also do the same. But give everybody an equal chance to expand their own little club, their own community, and make it better. And if at the end they cannot deliver on that, well, then they have to suffer the consequences. We can't just hang on and hang on, whether it's a Cabin Teely or whether it's any Drogheda, Dundalk. I mean, Drogheda, Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, they've all been in the first division. Derry, Cork, every one of them. So they all know what it's like. So now here's an opportunity to step back, catch your breath, and let's see where we can go forward. We've a new regime in there. They're talking very well. They're you know, they've been quite positive. Let's see a bit more transparency. Let's see where the UEFA money is coming in and how we can help clubs. And then when we help out all the first division clubs and improve standards and improve grounds and all that, let's look at helping the ladies. Let's help looking at the Leinster League, the Schoolboys League. Let's develop the whole thing over a period of maybe 5-10 years. But let's get the League of Ireland right first, because that's really what we have to do. But it hasn't been right. It hasn't been managed very well. And that's not me criticising any individual or anyone that works for the FAI or the League. It's just a fact. But we need to make it better.
I think you're right, Dev. I think, as they always say, the best time to start planning is on the back of a bad disaster. And we've got this bad disaster now. So why not go? Well, I wouldn't even class this as radical, a first division, like a one league. I think that's the way this league probably would have suited over the last number of years, if we had got rid of the first division, just had one league. And then, as you're saying, as part of your marketing, you then market matches. You don't market, well, we're going to play these guys in 3 weeks' time again. We're only going to play these guys at home once. That means you can market your games more. And that then helps, as you say, bring more people in the gates, get more money into the clubs. And I think Cabin Teely is a perfect example of a club when you think of how can we build this club, because out of all of our League of Ireland clubs, this club has, I think, how many members? You got 1,200 members maybe, going from under eights up. Yeah, so perfect club to use as a case study in this, as to let's go for one league. Let's see if we get more gates in. Let's make big matches marketable. So Cabin Teely, Shamrock Rovers are coming this week. They're not going to come back for the rest of the season or what have you. And make games that way. I think that's where we need to be looking.
That's where the romance is. That's where the attractive football, that's where it attracts people. And it attracts sponsors. It attracts the journalists out. It attracts media interest. It certainly is. You know, we've tried the bottom six, top six. We've tried this and tried that. Well, here's an opportunity to say, hang on now. Let's do this. Because genuinely, when you look around at all the grounds, with the exception of a few, all the others need a lot of work. I mean, Stradbroke in particular, we need help, and we're trying to do that at this moment in time. But I'm sure if you go around other grounds around the country, it'll be the same. And look, there is money. There is money coming from UEFA, and it has come in the past. But, you know, we didn't get any of it. I know other clubs that did, but now it's time to share the cake.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Pat, but I guess from an FAI and league position at the moment, we're in the middle of a pandemic, despite the fact that the roadmap and the restrictions are easing. I think people just want to see football resuming, and I think trying to implement a new-look league at this point is probably way down the pecking order at the moment. I think the priority for the FAI and indeed for everybody involved in football is to get some sort of football going once again in whatever shape
well,
that
exactly
is.
Hey, what I'm saying, Adrian, I mean, if you take it, we're getting the four teams back together with this mini tournament, and that I think that is the right thing to do. They need to have games under their belt. But now there's a lot of people saying, well, okay, we're not going to come back. We can't afford to come back. We can't do this and we can't do that, and we let's get money. Well, you know, we can't just come back and play football, a game of football, for the sake of playing football. There has to be something to play for, and there has to be an intention of it going further. And what I'm really saying to you is that this is the ideal opportunity. You know, if clubs cannot afford to come back, well, they can come back in some situation where they can manage it. And they can say, OK, well, then we don't need extra money. They're not going to be relegated. They're not going to be promoted for one season. At least you're getting football back out. You're trying something new. You're looking at, as I said, the media. You're looking at your sponsors. You're looking at all sorts of crowds coming in. It's an ideal opportunity. Where what are you going to do instead of that? You're going to go back and play the Premier League. Well, are you? Because there's six or seven clubs who, again, would not be in the same position as the four clubs that have had 6 or 8 weeks training. They've had their tests done and are ready for Europe, and they've got obviously a lot more finance than the others. So it's not a fair playing field at the moment. It's a very strange situation, and it's not anyone's fault. It's not one club's fault. But if you look at the overall context of what we're talking about, we're talking about unity. We're talking about moving forward. We're trying to make the game better. We're trying to make it more attractive. We're trying to get more crowds in. Well, then you have to try something different. You can't just sit there and say, OK, let's watch it. Let it go. We'll have another season of the same old tripe. It's madness. Madness.
Well, Tony Donoghue, our soccer correspondent, has been listening in over the last few minutes. Tony, what have you made of the conversation?
How are you doing, guys? Hi, Pat.
Tony, hold on. I'm on medication, so go easy.
Well, I've just been this morning out at I've been out at Shamrock Rovers, very impressive training facility at Broadstone. I'm sure you've been there yourself, Pat.
Yes.
And the first thing that comes to mind for me when you suggest that is it Shamrock Rovers B or Shamrock Rovers 2? And that's just one of the practical issues involved with your suggestion, which has some merit. There's no question about that. And I can see from a First Division point of view why it would be great to have Shamrock Rovers or Dundalk or Bohemians visit you once or twice a season. But are you going to have 19 teams in this league? Are you going to cut it down to 12 or 16 or what? There's lots of practical issues to begin with. And then in the wider context, I mean, what the league has been trying to do, we're in extraordinary times. There's no question about that. This is a global pandemic that no one could have seen coming. And despite that global pandemic, the FAI was in deep trouble anyway. We're looking at a situation, though, where the intention was to try and rise all boats, you know, try and get the standards higher, the sort of thing that Stephen Kenny achieved with Dundalk in getting to the group stages of the Europa League, or Michael O'Neill achieved with Shamrock Rovers.
Absolutely.
But I'm not so sure what it can do for the Dundalks or Shamrock Rovers of this world if they're going to be playing, with every respect, their own second team, which is unethical, or the Wexfords or the Cove Ramblers with respect to those clubs as well. So, you know, it's a nice idea, one level, Pat, but I can see that we talk about the divide in Irish football, and it's been there as long as I've been following Irish football. And, you know, it rears its ugly head again only last week. You know, to try and put together a solution as radical as that, even as logical as it might seem to you, I see huge, huge issues and difficulties and obstacles in the way, I'm afraid. So,
are those obstacles as big as what we have in front of us at the moment? And the answer is no. I mean, there's a massive divide. The two clubs you mentioned there, Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk, they were in the first division not so long ago. And with, you know, with a lot of hard work and a lot of development, a lot of luck on their side, they're now top of the three. And that's, you know, that's fine. But that can happen to Cove Ramblers. That can happen to a Drogheda United or a Cavan. That can happen to Wexford. You know, as I said, you have to dream. You can't lose the romance of it. But we're in a very difficult situation. I mean, I've spoke to many, many people involved with different clubs at the moment, and I don't mean to be smart when I say this, but we're at the coalface here. We're there. We see what it's like having to find money to find players, get training facilities, making sure now we've got to have all these corona advisors in and different things like that, and making sure facilities are in place, making sure that players are treated properly, making sure that the medicals are looked after, making sure that the money comes in to pay all these bills. And it's very, very difficult. But all I'm saying to you is we all have the same ambition, and we all wish the same for what Shamrock Rovers has up there is what we all want. And, you know, if you want me to be brutally honest, we want even better than that. And there is an opportunity here now to turn this in to something positive with the government, with UEFA, with FIFA, with the FEI, and with us all working together. But if we don't, we just paddle on the same way, and you'll have the same discussion in another 15, 20 years with another group of people. And that's the way it is. And it has happened. You've come in. I've come in since 85 into the league. I played in Forda for St. Pat's. And I can tell you, I played with Rovers in the league back in the early 70s. What improvement have I seen? Very, very little. So if you have the answers, Tony, or anyone else, I gladly roll in with it. But all I'm saying is there has to be change. There needs to be change. There needs to be change of attitude. And everybody must be treated in an equal manner. And that has not been the case over the last 15, 20 years. And
in all football countries, in all leagues, though, isn't there a pyramid, as you say? Isn't there a pathway? And aren't the elite at the very top? And you know, finances gravitate towards that. I mean, costs are also more expensive for the... You generally find in world football, the more money spent is the higher your league position. That seems to be the way across all leagues and all countries. And what we need to look at, I think, is the professional game and the elite game is miles away from the amateur game. And it looks like the first division in particular falls somewhere in between. And we are between two stools in your vision there versus the reality of where we are at the moment.
Well, I wouldn't firstly compare any our league to any league in Europe at the moment because we're that far behind. That's number one. And while I was talking, I wasn't just talking about the first division. Okay, I was asked the question about I'm talking about the Premier and the first division combining together, because if you look the first division up to about, you know, the top four clubs obviously are running away with it at the moment because of the financial gain and because of their situation. But there's not a lot between the rest. Let's be quite honest. You might think there is, but there's not from a playing point of view. So what I'm trying to say is facilities...
But are you talking about a 20-team league?
I am indeed, yeah. Home and away.
And what do we do with Shamrock Rovers 2?
Shamrock Rovers 2 will go into what I would call, which should have been done many, many years ago, is go back to the old B division. And that should be certainly held. That's, to me, that's the greatest mistake ever made. Players finish at 19, they can't get a game. They're sitting on their backside and they're not getting football. If they're playing in the B League, they'd be playing with experienced players, players coming back from injury, and so on. We went 13s, 15s, 17s and 19s, but the gap between 19s and onwards, it's difficult. It's difficult for players to get football. And if I was doing it, I'd certainly have a B League.
And James, you're agreeing with Pat in general, in broad terms. I mean, it's probably a debate for another day, but anyway.
Yeah, I kind of agree with the B League. I think the B League was great because it gave a position where, as Pat said, if you had injured players, they had somewhere to go to get a couple of games under their belts. If you kind of look, the easiest way to look at this is if you look at minor football and senior football in GAA, very few minors who are excellent at this stage make it up into the first team in the senior football. And that's the way it's going to go with our under-19s, is there's nowhere for them to go to bridge that gap. So I think that's a vital piece of apparatus needs to be there. I think a B-League definitely needs to be there. Getting back on Tony's position of the likes of the Cabinteely and Cove is playing against Dundalk. Cove knocked Dundalk out of the EA Sports Cup final and semi-final last year. So you can't say they're an absolute walkover. The hardest games Dundalk have had over the last couple of years have been against Finn Harps and bottom of the table now Sligo Rovers. So to compare the first division that they won't give a game, I think is a little bit unfair, to tell you the truth. And if you look at the Premiership in England, these teams don't give teams a game, but they still, they're allowed to be in the Premiership. I think it's an idea to give us down to one league, and standards will have improved across the 20 teams. I don't think it'll be as, there will be a gap, of course, there's a gap in the Premier Division as it is, but that gap might come closer eventually.
Mm. And I'm sure there's some listeners there or eventually will say, oh, Pat Logan has the interests of Cavendish. No, I've been saying this for many, many years, because we've tried everything else, lads. We've tried it, and it hasn't been successful. Our facilities, like Tony saying he's up in Rhodes, so I'm fine, but, you know, they got a bit of luck, they got a good investment, and they deserve every opportunity to improve. But that doesn't mean that we have to leave everybody else behind. All the other clubs want to develop in the same way. If you take Bray is a perfect example. Great location. All it needs is proper investment, and they could have the same situation. Or if you go over to Shelbourne, fantastic what they're doing. So there's opportunities there, but I'm just saying I'd rather see it all happening for all the clubs rather than a couple of clubs and clubs getting left behind and the gap getting bigger and bigger. And I don't think that's good from a football point of view, from a sporting point of view, and even from a development point of view, it's no good. So that's the difficulty I see with it. I'm not for 1 minute saying that I have the answers. All I am saying is it's certainly worth a debate. They're talking about playing in the north of Ireland. That can still happen. An All-Ireland League, it can still happen, whatever it may be. But can it happen with the facilities that we have at present? No, it can't, because the facilities are not up to standard, except for maybe 4 or 6 clubs.
Okay, well, listen, we'll leave that element of the conversation at that for now. Pat, it's difficult in the absence of the financial plan to know what's going to happen, but you've been around football for, dare I say it, you were back playing in the early 70s when there was just one league, the League of Ireland.
Yeah, I started Robert Rovers in the early 70s. It was a little earlier than that. It was just 69, 70, yeah, went to Milltown. My God.
Yeah, but given that at the moment, you know, there's an element of firefighting about all of this because the onus and the emphasis is on getting football going once again, what's your best guess as to what might happen this year?
Well, I think first, you know, the biggest problem we've had for many years is self-interest. But I think the biggest problem we've got now, and I think it's gonna really, you know, if we don't have it and it's money, if we don't have the money to invest and we don't spend the money in the proper manner, well, there is no future for it. I can assure you that, because it's all about money. And it's not fair on players or coaches or managers giving their lifetime to League of Ireland football and you're just shown the door and there's nothing there for you. There's no pension, there's no tanks, there's no nothing. And if there's people out there who are, you know, young kids and family and mortgages and they're trying to make a living in League of Ireland, it's very, very difficult to have a future. So it's all about money and investment. And who's going to invest and who's going to put money into something that has been just sort of dragged along for many, many years? It needs change. It needs people to caress it, to have a little bit of, you know, TLC with it. It's there. The brand is there. The football is there. But I do genuinely think the investment has to come into it. And that's a big, big job for the FAI because, as I said, they have their own issues and problems out there and they can't obviously put their arm around the League of Ireland and drag that along. But we all have to work together and try and get it right because genuinely, if we don't have the finance and we don't have the finance invested into the clubs and into facilities and academies, you know, we might as well forget about what we're trying to achieve because genuinely, players want the opportunity to play at the highest level and make a career for themselves. Can they make a career, a permanent career in the League of Ireland at the moment? With a couple of clubs, they can. Can the coaches make it, you know, a decent living out of it? Very difficult for them. So I'd like to think that we can get more money into the game here. I'd like to think that the money can be better spent. And I'd like to think that we can get definitely bigger sponsors and heavier sponsors and that not only just the League of Ireland, but right across the whole league or the soccer fraternity, the soccer family, it needs to develop better. And if you look at some of the schoolboy clubs, they've done brilliantly, and now they've lost out on compensation. That's an area that needs to be addressed as well, and it comes back to the one word again, money.
Okay. Mention of money. Thanks very much, Pat, for your contribution. That's Pat Devlin. Tony, before we let you go, on money, this financial plan that all the clubs are waiting to find out about later this week, potentially and possibly on Thursday. I asked this question a little earlier. Is there a concern or perhaps a worry that clubs will be expecting too much from this financial plan?
I think there's been so much talked about regarding the financial plan that that's probably led to high expectations. And I think the FAI haven't been in a position to answer all the questions the clubs have fairly asked, because they've got contracts themselves to try and secure. They've got wages to pay. And they don't want to be in a situation where they're going to have to trade recklessly between now and the end of a season, knowing that without fans in the stadiums and very little other income for them, that they can't bring their clubs into that sort of financial situation unless they know exactly what the figures are and what they're dealing with. And they haven't been given that yet. And I think the reason they haven't been given that is because the FAI have been waiting and waiting and waiting for proper figures from FIFA. I think they're expecting some subvention from the world governing body, but they don't know how much. Infantino spoke about it this weekend. That was relayed to the clubs, again, offering them a little bit of hope. But hope isn't enough. It needs pound, shillings and pence, as Pat will remember. It needs, you know, figures on the table that the clubs can run through their own accounts and say, yes, I can continue to trade. I don't want the likes of Cork City. You don't want to put your club, which has been once again close to the brink. Lots of League of Ireland clubs have been close to the brink. We don't have to go through that list. And you don't want people who are, you know, with the responsibility of the clubs in their hands, put the club's futures at risk because of the financial uncertainty we have at the moment. So there'll be a number of issues. There'll be, you know, possible wage cuts that'll be asked of the players and staff. There'll be the continuation of the COVID-19 wage subsidy scheme right till the end of the season, if the government can come up with that. And then how much can FIFA and the FAI bring to the table? And there still is likely to be a big gap. There's talk about streaming income, perhaps, although with the return of the Premier League and live football on every hour on the hour, every day of the week, it seems that is possibly limited in its scope for profitability as well. So, yeah, everyone is expecting something to happen by Thursday, but everyone's been asking questions for a long time and they haven't got answers yet.
Final one for you, Tony. And James, you might start thinking about your answer. Don't know if you saw this, Tony, on the RT website today. The Chinese under 19 lads, six of them banned from playing for 6 months and forced to write self-criticism essays after they flouted coronavirus provincial rules to go drinking late at night. The question for you, Tony O'Donoghue, is if you were to write a self-criticism essay, what would your starting point be?
It would be my first touch.
And James? James is laughing now to buy himself some time to think here.
His first touch. I love that. Oh, gee, where would you start with me? There'd be so many essays wrote.
All right, listen. We'll leave it there.
I suppose I annoy everybody about the League of Ireland.
Okay. Tony, thanks for that. James, you keep thinking about what would be first on your essay. Now, it may seem like a bit of an unlikely alliance, but this, of course, is the League of Ireland. Drogheda United and Turkish side Trabzonspor have been sister clubs for some 10 years. And to talk about this Irish-Turkish connection, we're joined by Róisín Phillips, who was previously a director of Drogheda United and is a daughter of the late Vincent Hoey. Vincent, of course, who sadly passed away, was at the helm of Drogheda for so many of the great days. Róisín, can you just tell us about this link-up with Trabzonspor and how it came about initially?
Okay, Adrian, it goes back, I suppose, far longer than actually 2011 when they announced that we'd become their sister club. In fact, it goes back to the Great Famine in 1845. Drogheda had links with Turkey as a result of the Sultan at the time actually sending aid over to the Irish people, and boats came up the Boyne in Drogheda. And he also sent £1,000 actually at the time to Ireland to assist. So there's been a long history, I suppose, of you know, cooperation between the two countries, particularly from the Turkish side to Ireland. When I first got involved in Drogheda during our financial difficulties, actually in 2008, I became aware that there was a link between Drogheda and Trabzonspor, and it was through the fans, actually, at the time. Mm. A number of Turkish fans had realised that we shared the same colours, the Carrick and Blue, and also that our club crest, the Star and Crescent, featured on the Turkish flag. So they were inspired by this, of course, and got in touch with Drogheda fans, and it grew from there. Now, during examinership, when we were trying to fundraise, etc., I was flabbergasted by the amount of goodwill messages that I was getting from Turkish people. And I kind of looked into this and thought, crikey, you know, there's a relationship between the fans. They were tremendous at the time. I mean, they were publicising us in Turkey. They were, you know, setting up Facebook pages. They were sending donations even from Turkey, you know, in envelopes. I remember opening an envelope one day and 40 euro falling out of it, you know. Incredible stuff.
Wow.
And there were several people in particular, very staunch fans over there, that couldn't do enough for us, frankly. Just a little bit of history about myself. I had been involved in tour operating in Ireland for 15 years before that. I was working for a tour operator, one of the big tour operators, and we had had a lot of dealings with Turkey over the years. They were one of our biggest markets. So I knew the Turkish people. I knew the way they operate. I knew that they were very similar to the Irish people in that sort of welcoming, warm way. So I was intrigued by this relationship anyway. And after examinership, once we got through all that issue, I set about with a few of my colleagues in Drogheda United exploring this a little bit further. And we actually got in touch with the Turkish Embassy in Dublin, and we got a great reception there. We went up and we met the ambassador, and we investigated the possibility of strengthening ties between Turkey and Drogheda, between Trabzonspor and Drogheda, at board level, I suppose, as well as fan level, and in trying to see if we could organise a friendly between the two teams. And, of course, that ended up being a bit of a mess at the time. We eventually got it to happen. The Turkish ambassador at the time was fantastic, very instrumental in bringing that about. But I suppose, you know, Adrian, the thing I learned from all of this was just how amazing sport is in bringing people together, and more than that, bringing countries together, communities together. Because without the Drogheda United Trabzonspor connection, I don't believe we would have had such an amazing sort of cooperation between Ireland and Turkey actually after that, because we brought over, they flew over business leaders on the flight with the team from Trabzon. And we organised for business leaders in Drogheda to meet them. And we had politicians, hosted their politicians in Leinster House. So it was a much bigger event than just soccer, you know.
Sure.
But it has, you know, it's gone from strength to strength. And I suppose my brother now, Connor, who's chairman of Drogheda United, is hoping that he can explore this even further. And what he wants to do, and I know he intended to do it this year, he's been in touch with Trabzonspor, and again with the new Turkish ambassador, is to go back over to Turkey with our team and have a friendly over there. Unfortunately, obviously, you know, it hasn't happened this year, and it won't for obvious reasons, but he's still hopeful that that'll happen next year or the year after.
Yeah, it's a great link-up and it's a great story because, as you mentioned, the friendly, I think it was in 2013, it was supposed to be played. And, of course, there's a huge Turkish community in Ireland and, of course, across the water in England. And Trabzonspor, they're a big, big club in Turkey. In fact, they're the only club in Turkey to have won the league from a city outside of Istanbul. So they're a very big club with huge support, and it's noticeable whenever you tweet something related to Turkey. When I think Drogheda over the weekend sent out on their Twitter feed a picture of some representatives from Trabzon that had visited Ireland back in 2013, the engagement from Turkey was sensational. So it's you know, the link up there potentially is huge for Drogheda.
Exactly. I mean, it's one of, as you say, it's one of the big four Super League clubs in Turkey, and they're actually sitting at the top of the league at the moment. They're joined first with a point goal difference. So, I mean, it's massive, and I think that they number about 12 million supporters worldwide. You know, it's unimaginable for a club like Drogheda to have that, you know, that breadth of support, I suppose, open to us. So, yeah, as I say, you can see it. They've set up Facebook pages, and, you know, they've a Drogheda United Trabzonspor Facebook page. They've got us on their website. You know, it's something we could never have imagined. And right. We certainly, you know, it's thanks to fans, I suppose, ultimately, that it came about in the first place. But I suppose we were lucky in that we had that historical connection as well between the town and Turkey. So, you know, it's been great for us. And I mean, even this morning, I was actually on to one of the lads in Trabzonspor, just asking, you know, when they were starting up again. I think they're starting the league there, starting on the 12th of June. So I think they've 8 more matches to go, but hopefully they'll win it, and hopefully we'll be back over there, you know, at some point to help them celebrate.
And of course, you get to go to their fancy new stadium as well, unlike when we were there in 2013.
Exactly.
With Derry City going to the old stadium. And it was actually crazy because I remember going up the night before the match up to the stadium, and in the left-hand corner of the stand, there was a Drogheda United flag.
Incredible.
And it's absolutely crazy. Right in their stand, it stays there all the time. It was never taken down, is what I thought. Yeah. I actually have a picture of it, which I'm going to tweet out after this is all done.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah.
You see the picture of the Drogheda United flags in the middle. But Trabzon itself is a lovely, lovely, lovely town. They're very, very passionate about their football throughout the entire city. As you said, it is as far east as you're probably going to get from Istanbul. It was about a 3.5-hour flight from Istanbul out to Trabzon. So it's a fair old distance away, but they are really, really passionate. And the link up is, it's not just over Facebook or Twitter or anything like that. It's actually in the stadium as well. You see it.
Yeah, that's incredible. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing I always said about the Turkish people. They're you know, I'm when I was working in the industry myself years ago, I mean, I was told that if you make a friend of a Turkish person, that's it. You know, the loyalty exceeds everything else, and they will never, you know, that friendship will remain concrete, you know, for the rest of your life. But and it's true. I mean, I know it myself because I still have this communication, even though I'm no longer involved in a day-to-day basis in Drogheda United. I'm still getting, you know, messages and birthday gifts from these people in Turkey, you know, incredible stuff.
Well, it's a great story. Listen, well done, Roisin. Thanks very much for joining us on the RT Soccer Podcast and telling us about that unique link-up between Drogheda United and Trabzonspor. James, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm away for the next week or so, next fortnight. So you'll be in the company of Damien O'Mara. So look after him and be good to him. Be nice to him, won't you?
Oh, no. We've gone from a Sligo fan to a Bowes fan. What's happening?
Sorry for your troubles.
Before we leave it, I think I just have to mention it. One person who every League of Ireland fan probably recognises around the league. Every single Shamrock Rovers match you went to, you probably saw him in the crowd with his long, curly hair. But Declan Keogh, obviously, of Shamrock Rovers, a fan that I remember having a good chat to many, many years ago in the Swiss College when they were out at Morton Stadium, sadly passed away over the last couple of days. So I thought I'd like to pay my respects to him, if possible, before we end today's podcast.
Yeah, I saw that over the weekend. Very sad. And our sympathies go to the Keogh family. James, until the next time. Bye-bye.